Now, I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA One The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, we have reports from Jill Robbins, Andrew Smith, and Anna Mateo. First, Jill tells us about a South Korean effort to create what is being called beef rice. Then, Andrew will be here to tell us why truck drivers are running into historic small bridges in places like Vermont and Georgia. You will also hear why some Chinese students are no longer interested in studying in the U.S. And be sure to stay with us for some ancient history lessons from Anna Mateo in this week's Words and Their Stories. Now, here's Jill.
South Korean researchers have combined cow muscle cells with rice grains. They say the new rice is an important step towards a sustainable, less costly source of protein. The researchers suggested it could replace the meat of farmed cattle or beef. Professor Jin Ki-hong of Yonsei University led the research. Hong said the beef rice is the first product of its kind. The results of the research were recently published in Matter. The beef rice uses grain particles as the base for growing animal muscle and fat cells. The researchers treated rice grains with chemicals called enzymes to create an environment for cell growth. They added cells from cattle to create the final product, which is a combination or hybrid of the two. The result looks like a grain of rice with a pink color. Companies around the world have launched efforts to develop meat that is grown in a laboratory. One of the latest attempts involves plant-based chicken and eel meat developed from soybean that is sold in Singapore. Hong's team said rice has an added gain in terms of safety compared to soy or nuts because fewer people have allergic reactions to it. He said that if it is developed into food products, cultured beef rice could serve as a sustainable protein source. He added that it would be good in environments where traditional animal farming is too difficult. The beef rice contains around 8% more protein and 7% more fat than normal rice. Hong noted the protein is 18% animal-based. That makes it a good source of important nutrients needed by humans called essential amino acids. Beef rice costs about $2 per kilogram. Hong said it results in the release of less carbon gas than traditional cattle raising. He said that it could compete with other products in stores. Hong said there are still some problems in production. And he added, it will not be easy to get people to accept its taste and how it feels in the mouth or its texture. Kim Dong-kyu recently ate the beef rice at a restaurant in the Korean capital, Seoul. He praised the new idea. Kim said, but honestly, I don't think it can replicate the juiciness or texture of real beef. Christian Krammel, who is from Germany, expressed hope for the future. Krammel said, now, it does not compare to beef yet, but as I see the research is in early stages, I would say it's a great way forward. I'm Jill Robbins.
Historic covered bridges in the United States are under threat by the use of the modern technology GPS. GPS is short for Global Positioning System. The satellite system tells people who use map applications what roads to use to go from one place to another. The historic bridges usually have signs, including flashing lights, to warn trucks that are too tall or too heavy not to cross. But some truck drivers do not follow the warnings and crash into the bridge. They say the GPS directed them onto the bridge. Many times, the drivers are using systems made for cars instead of large trucks. In the northeastern state of Vermont, Linden town officials say that the 146-year-old Miller's Bridge has been hit more than 20 times. Justin Smith is an administrator for Linden. GPS is the most general excuse that is given by drivers that do hit the bridge, he said. Drivers can face a fine of $5,000 from the town, plus payments to the state. But he added that the real problem is drivers simply not thinking about their actions. Jack Harris is the head of Linden's police. He said that the bridge had to be closed twice for major repairs. Each time, it took several months to finish the job. In 2019, a truck hit the bridge supports. Engineering and repair costs were nearly $100,000, said Smith. About half the time, the town gets its money back through the driver's insurance, if it catches them. Many drivers simply drive away without telling officials about the accident. A nearby security camera aimed at the bridge has helped officials find some drivers. They will claim that they didn't know they hit it, and yet you'll see the truck stop in the middle of the bridge, and they'll look up to see that they're hitting the bridge, Police Chief Harris said. Bill Caswell is president of the National Society for the Preservation of Covered Bridges. He said trucks have damaged many covered bridges in Vermont and other states like Illinois and Ohio. Caswell said trucks hit a covered bridge in Cobb County, Georgia, so many times that officials put metal barriers at each end of it. The bridge also has warning signs and flashing lights. Even with all the warnings, the barriers are still struck, Caswell wrote to the Associated Press. But the bridge is now protected. Back in Linden, the town is looking at plans to put a steel beam in front of the bridge. The beam would force trucks that are too tall to come to a stop. A Google spokesperson said their Google Maps app is made for drivers of cars and small trucks. The spokesperson added that drivers of larger vehicles should use different systems. Apple also has a Maps app. The company did not answer an Associated Press email asking for comment. In Linden, there are different ideas in town about what to do, said Smith, the administrator. Some people obviously want to see something that protects the bridge, so we can keep it in place, he said. Others are like, it's time to take it off and set it on the side and put a more standard bridge in. I'm Andrew Smith.
The U.S. State Department says there were about 20,000 fewer visas issued to Chinese students last year compared to before the COVID-19 pandemic. After about 40 years of increasing interest, many students from China say they are considering other places for their higher education, including Britain and Hong Kong. One student from Shanghai, Helen Dong, said she is concerned about the rising cost of higher education in the U.S. She is going to study advertising in Hong Kong later this year, where it is less costly. "It doesn't work for me when you have to spend $278,000, but find no job upon returning," Dong said. Yvonne Wang of Shanghai is 24. She studies literature and culture at the University of Bristol in Britain. She said she chose Britain because it is safer. She and her family were worried about gun violence in the U.S. Families in Shanghai usually don't want to send their daughters to a place where guns are not banned, she said. The U.K., United Kingdom, is safer, and that's the biggest consideration for my parents, she added. Others say recent tensions between the U.S. and China have influenced the drop in students. Chinese officials say the American government is not as friendly toward Chinese students as in past years. They cite an executive order by former President Donald Trump that banned students who came from Chinese schools with a strong link to China's military. In addition, the Chinese Foreign Ministry says some students have been unfairly questioned and sent home after arriving at airports in the U.S. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Mao Ning called the U.S. actions discriminatory and politically motivated.
Young Chinese people whose parents studied in foreign countries also want to get that experience. A China-based education service company called New Oriental said students believe an education from a good foreign university will help their chances of getting a job at home, where the unemployment rate for 16 to 24-year-olds was 15% late last year. They are considering schools in places such as Britain, Canada, and Australia instead. Wang, the student from Shanghai, who studies in Britain, said many young people want to spend time away from China after seeing the tight restrictions there during the COVID-19 pandemic. Starting in 2020, China restricted the ability of students to travel outside the country for their education because of the COVID-19 pandemic. The restrictions lasted for over 2 years, but now China is permitting students to travel again. American universities hoped the number of Chinese students would return to levels seen in 2019 or before, but now some experts believe there will not be a comeback. One international education expert is Fanta Av. She is executive director of NAFSA, a national group of international student advisors. Av said, "International education is a bridge. That means those who come to study in the U.S. will maintain a connection with American classmates and organizations once they return to their home countries. Those young people who come to the U.S. will become engineers, politicians, and business leaders who have good feelings about America." Av said, higher education provides a pipeline of young people from other countries who get to experience life in the U.S. Not seeing that pipeline as strong means that we in the U.S. have to pay attention, because China-U.S. relations are very important. At the same time, students who study in the U.S. find themselves in a predicament. The U.S.-China Education Trust spoke with Chinese students who were in the U.S. from 1991 through 2021 and found students from China have been criticized in the U.S. as potential spies and in China as too influenced by the West.
Students from China have been coming to the U.S. in increasing numbers since 1979, when diplomatic ties between the sides were established. At that time, leaders in Beijing asked the United States and then-President Jimmy Carter to permit 5,000 students to study in the U.S. Carter said he would permit 100,000 students to come. By 1981, China permitted students to use their own money to pay for school, instead of depending on money from the government. That change brought more students to the U.S. The number of Chinese students in the U.S. grew to over 100,000 in 2009 as family wealth increased. The Open Doors report, published by the Institute on International Education, said that by the 2019-2020 school year, there were over 370,000 Chinese students studying or working in the U.S. Last year, the number was 289,000. In the 12-month period ending last September, the U.S. government gave out about 86,000 student visas to Chinese citizens. However, that number is lower than the pre-pandemic level of about 105,000.
Alan Coe founded Cardinal Education, a company that advises and helps prepare students for college. His business often works with Asian students considering higher education in the U.S. He said, "The drop should be concerning to the U.S. government and universities, which depend on money from Chinese students."
10 or 20,000 students, if you figure their tuition dollars on average, we'll say is about 30 to 40,000 plus their living expenses. And if you multiply that out, that is a massive amount of money that is now missing from the American economy.
Coe noted that even if the number of students from countries such as India and Vietnam are increasing, China has such a scale in terms of population and wealth that no country is actually going to be able to replace it. But Coe said, international students continue to see the education and the academic opportunities in the U.S. as very strong. I don't think the other universities in Asia, Europe, Australia, and Canada are catching up to top American universities in terms of reputation and prestige. However, the countries that international students in the U.S. come from are changing. The IIE noted that many American universities are now centering their efforts on recruiting students from India, especially for programs that offer advanced degrees. Still, 36% of schools reported increases in new Chinese students starting last autumn. A group that follows schools that offer advanced degrees, called the Council of Graduate Schools, said American universities have seen an increase in students from India and sub-Saharan Africa since 2020. At the same time, the number of students from China has decreased. The group noted increased competition from Chinese universities and geopolitical tension between China and the United States as reasons for the change. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Do you like to learn about ancient history? If you do, you could call yourself a history buff. If you are a buff, you have a strong interest in a subject and want to learn all about it. History buffs can have a special interest in a particular historical period in the past. For example, they might read a lot about ancient Greek or Roman history. History buffs might be interested in ancient Mesopotamia or Carthage, or perhaps the ancient Mayans or Incas would be up their alley. If something is up your alley, it goes along with your interests. It is something you want to know more about. However, English speakers use the expression ancient history in other ways, and many have nothing to do with exploring cultures from long ago. For example, if something is ancient history, it is no longer meaningful or relevant. It is outdated or totally forgotten. Something that is ancient history is old news. Let's say a business owner wants to modernize and update her workspace. She says she wants to get a new fax machine. But then her young son tells her fax machines are ancient history. Ancient history can describe events in a person's past. Let's say a coworker always talks about his time in high school. When he asks about yours, you might say that your high school days are ancient history. You barely remember them. Sometimes we use ancient history to mean something has been completely forgotten, even if it is a fairly recent event. It just feels like it happened a long time ago. For example, two friends of yours want to start a business together. Last month, it was a cafe. Now their latest idea is offering storage units for rent. When you ask about the cafe idea, they might say, "Oh, that idea is ancient history. We moved on from that." We also use ancient history in another way. Sometimes ancient history means an issue has been resolved and is no longer a problem. It is water under the bridge. Water under the bridge is another idiom that means a problem no longer exists. For example, let's say you had an unpleasant experience with a good friend, but it happened years ago. You both value your friendship and choose to forgive and forget. The problem is no longer an issue between the two of you. It is ancient history. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. We just heard Anna Mateo tell us about the phrase ancient history. Anna is here now for a review. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Anna. I'm glad you could be here to talk about ancient history. We will be talking about some really old stuff today, right? Like the dinosaurs or ruins from Asia or Central America.
Well, hang on, Dan. Not exactly.
Oh, I thought we were discussing ancient history. I have all these old books with me, and I marked some pages that I really want to talk about.
Well, that sounds great. You have some reading to do later. But tell me, do you have a favorite quote from an ancient thinker?
Actually, I do. Here's one from Aristotle. He said, "Patience is bitter, but its fruit is sweet."
I really like that. That is a good one. We all need a little patience sometimes. But Dan, in this week's story, I talk about the phrase some people like to use in American English. We aren't really talking about things that happened thousands of years ago when we say something is ancient history.
Okay, well, why don't you tell us a little bit more about that then?
Absolutely. When we say something is ancient history, we are really using a form of exaggeration to make a point. In my story, I talked about a friend who was constantly changing ideas for a new business. One month, they said they wanted to open a cafe. The next month, it was something different, renting out storage units. If something changes based on only 30 days, it's not really ancient, but the expression emphasizes that it is old news.
Ah, okay. I get it. So perhaps if I had a friend that liked to go out on a lot of dates, and one month he is dating somebody I met, let's call her Lisa, and I saw him a couple weeks ago, and I asked about Lisa, and he said, "She's ancient history, but I met someone new, and she's great. Her name is Angela." Do you think that works as an example for this expression?
Yes, that sounds about right. The expression simply means that something is done, finished. You have dealt with it. It's no longer an issue. You have moved on, like your friend and his dates. If you and a friend had a disagreement, but later made up, you could say that the fight was water under the bridge or ancient history. Here's another example. Technology, we all know, moves at a very fast pace. You might think you have the latest, greatest mobile phone, but then a couple months later, a new phone comes out and it makes your new phone ancient history.
Ah, Anna, I know how that goes. My phone is just 1 year old and it already seems like it needs to be replaced.
Dan, sometimes, though, we have something old that is worth hanging on to. You might call that item an oldie but goodie. Maybe you have a piece of clothing that is classic, timeless. It never gets old. It will never be ancient history.
Thanks, Anna. That makes sense. And I'm going to make sure I hold on to those pieces of clothing. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, Dan. Thanks for having me. Bye.
Thanks, Anna. It's always great to have you on the show. On today's podcast, we also heard from Jill Robbins, who told us about the protein rice innovation going on in South Korea. Would you give up your meat if you could have that rice? Let us know. Then we heard about a technology problem that is threatening small historic bridges in places like Vermont and Georgia in the United States. Seems like GPS is not always perfect. And we also heard about why Chinese students are having second thoughts about spending money to continue their higher education in the United States. Thanks to Anna, Andrew, Jill, and the rest of my VOA colleagues for their work on today's podcast.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm